for public broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up today, we're going to talk about the Children's Health Insurance Program. It's in danger of not being renewed in Congress. We're going to talk about that. Also, President Trump's claim that Obamacare has been repealed. We'll talk about that. And also, global warming. And we'll talk with a USF researcher who is on her way to the Antarctic to find out how the ice shelves are doing down there. The world's largest ice sheet may be less stable than previously thought, posing an even greater risk to Florida's coastline. The first ever marine geologic survey of East Antarctica's Sabrina Coast, published this week in Nature, concludes that some regions of the massive East Antarctic ice sheet have been sensitive to climate change for millions of years. Much like the West Antarctic ice sheet, this region of the East Antarctic ice sheet is grounded below sea level, and local glaciers are experiencing ice mass loss due to ocean warming. We're going to talk with the USF scientist who is on her way to Antarctica. She's Amelia Chevanel. She's an associate professor at the USF College of Marine Science, and she's been studying this giant ice mass in Antarctica for years. I spoke with her earlier today. Amelia Chevanel of the University of South Florida, welcome to WMNF.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're about to take a trip to Antarctica.
Yes, I am leaving on Sunday for the Ross Sea, which is that sort of big inlet. When you look at Antarctica, it makes it, people think it's like a bite taken out of the side.
Just south of New Zealand. How many times have you been to Antarctica?
I think this will be my 9th time, maybe 10th.
You're going to look at the Eastern Antarctica ice shelf, is that right?
The East Antarctic ice sheet.
Yes.
And we are going to look at, actually, with this expedition, we're looking at both the history of the East and the West Antarctic ice shelf, the sheet, sorry.
what's the difference?
Do you want me to do that again?
No. What's the difference between a sheet and a shelf?
So the ice sheet is grounded on land, and the ice shelf is that point beyond what's called the grounding line where the ice begins to float on the ocean.
All right.
So, and that is a shelf. And in the Ross Sea, the ice shelf is called the Ross Ice Shelf.
Now, I understand that this sheet that you're about to look at is quite large. How large is it?
Well, it is probably about the size of the U.S.
The whole U.S.?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Give or take a few square miles.
Yeah, give or take a few states here and there.
That's huge. And how deep is it?
Well, the maximum height of the ice sheet in the center dome area, I believe, is about 3,000 feet.
Wow, that's thick. So it contains a heck of a lot of water.
Yes, it does. So the East Antarctic ice sheet alone contains 53 meters of sea level equivalent, and the West Antarctic ice sheet contains about 3 to 4 meters of sea level equivalent. So we like to say about 58 meters of sea level rise if all of Antarctica melted.
58 meters, and what does that translate to in feet?
So you multiply by 3, 58 times 3 is 170, I don't do math well in my head this early in the morning.
Somewhere over, just a little over 174 feet.
Yep.
Wow. So are these, both of these sheets that you've talked about so far, are they melting? Is there anything that's causing them to melt?
Yes, so the West Antarctic ice sheet we know is melting pretty rapidly, so it's losing mass. And this is due to warmer ocean waters that are coming up onto the continental shelf around West Antarctica and melting the ice from below. And the East Antarctic ice sheet it's a little bit more complicated. It seems to be in equilibrium right now, meaning that the amount of ice lost is equal to the amount that's gained. But in certain areas, we are losing a lot of ice mass. And one of those is a place that I've studied quite extensively called the Totten and Aurora subglacial basin area in East Antarctica. And that is thinning probably the most rapidly of anywhere in East Antarctica. And so the reason that it is melting is because oceans are warming and temperatures, atmospheric temperatures are warming. And that is due to us, emissions of CO2 from combustion of fossil fuels.
Yeah, so you're not one of those climate change deniers. There's a link between these melting ice sheets and what we do here in North America and Asia and Europe.
Yes, there definitely is. And no, I am not a climate denier. I am one of those dreaded climate scientists. And I think about this stuff every day. And I've noticed changes even since I've begun to go to Antarctica in 1995. What we see in places now that you never saw before is surface melt. So meltwater that's on the surface of the glaciers. And in Antarctica, you don't actually see that a lot, or you didn't. And now, every time I go, we see more and more. So big pools of meltwater. You can see meltwater sort of glistening on the surface of the snow. And it's a lot warmer, and it's a lot different. We also see increased sea ice, and that is because we're adding a lot of fresh water to the surface of the ocean, and fresh water freezes more quickly than salt water and at a lower temperature. And so we're seeing an increase in sea ice because of that meltwater being added to the Southern Ocean. And so I've seen it, and it's pretty dramatic.
So getting back to this question, too, of something among the things that you've never seen before, water on the surface of the Antarctic that's in liquid form, that's melting, is that right? And is that because of the atmosphere?
It is, yes. It's because of heat in the atmosphere as well as heat that's given off by the ocean that makes the surrounding sort of edges of the Antarctic ice sheet a lot warmer.
Now, if this giant East Antarctica ice sheet were to melt, which is it's hard to imagine, but it's as big as the U.S., it would raise global sea levels by 170-some feet by your calculation. That's quite a change. All of Tampa, all of Miami, almost every coastal community in Florida would be gone if that happened. But in the history of this ice sheet, and I know you've looked at this and written about it for Nature, have there been any times over the last, several million years where there have been sudden changes to this East Antarctic ice sheet?
Yes. So probably not in the last several hundred years. Or several thousand years and million years. There are a couple of periods of time where the climate has been as warm as today, and CO2 levels have been equivalent, a time period called the Pliocene, about 5 million years ago. And some places in East Antarctica, it looks as if there were dramatic changes in where the ice was in the past during that time, and some places where it doesn't look like the ice has changed at all. Now, what we see more consistently is about 15, 16 million years ago at a time called the Middle Miocene. And this is a time where CO2 levels in the atmosphere, based on our proxy studies of past atmospheric CO2 that we get from doing the chemistry of mud at the bottom of the ocean. And during that time, CO2 is higher than today, or equal to or higher than today, but not by much, to about 500 ppm and parts per million. And today, I think our CO2 is 410, 413 parts per million. And so the Middle Miocene had higher CO2, and it had temperatures equal to or slightly warmer than today. So we kind of think of that period as where we're headed with continued emission of CO2 into the atmosphere. And during that time, what we see is glaciers that, and the ice sheet that is responding very rapidly. So it is advancing and then retreating really quickly and then advancing again. So it's very unstable and unpredictable. And with each of those advances and then retreats, we get changes in sea level, a rise and a fall. And we see this in records all over the world. So one of the best records of this sea level change is off of New Jersey. And we see large changes in sea level during that time. And we also see, you know, some crazy things in the geologic record. We see palm trees in New Zealand and crocodiles and corals that are now only in the equatorial regions of the Pacific and Indian Ocean that were as far south as New Zealand.
Mm. Yeah, when you talk about the Miocene and the Pliocene eras where the CO2 levels were just as high or higher than they are today, what caused the high CO2 levels back then?
Good question. And scientists are still trying to figure that out. There are a couple of hypotheses. One is that there was a lot more seafloor spreading, and so the plate boundaries were a lot more active, and there were a lot more volcanism. And so that releases CO2 from the Earth into the atmosphere. And that's one hypothesis. And the other hypotheses are that there was a very rapid input of CO2 and magma from the Columbia River flood basalt in Washington State. And this was a period of time when they were erupting, so volcanic influences again. But, you know, this is something that we have been trying to figure out for a number of years. I actually wrote my PhD on this topic. And we still haven't figured it out. You know, the Earth is a pretty mysterious place, and we spend a lot of time trying to understand its evolution and what we might expect in the future from looking at how Earth behaves in the past.
We're talking with Amelia Chevanel of the University of South Florida. She's about to go to Antarctica to research the East Antarctic Ice Shelf, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. What builds up ice on the Antarctic? What causes it? Is it snowfall, or what causes that ice to be there and to grow?
Well, you're exactly right. So in order to have an ice sheet form, you have to have a couple of things. As you correctly point out, you have to have precipitation. And so there has to be a source of moisture in the atmosphere that is allowed to snow out. So temperature has to be cold enough that there snow can form. So we can't be here in Tampa, at least not this week. And on top of that, what is really important, and scientists have learned from studying the past, is that it seems as if to build a large ice sheet, you need to have summer temperatures that are cold enough that the snow from the previous winter doesn't melt. Mm-hmm. And so that's how you build glaciers, is by never actually melting the snow that's accumulated the year before.
Hmm. So just getting back to your point, too, that this East Antarctic ice shelf has fluctuated pretty wildly in the distant past, and we might have seen crocodiles and palm trees in unusual places. Would you guess that with the path that we're on, with global climate change on the current path, that we could see alligators and coconut palms in eastern Canada?
Maybe. Who knows how soon that would be? But, you know, we are seeing differences in species distribution. We're seeing birds up north in the U.S. that aren't leaving and coming to Florida because it's warm enough for them to stay. And so we are seeing ecological changes right now that are related to changes in atmospheric temperature. We see it in Antarctica. There are different species of penguins that are disappearing from areas that are too warm, and they're moving south, and they're being replaced by other species of penguins that we've never seen there before. So it's pretty interesting to, I'm not a biologist, but I am interested in the biology of what, of climate change.
Mm-hmm. Amelia, what do you pack when you go to Antarctica? What's the most unusual thing that you pack when you go?
Well, I'm sitting amongst my piles right now of things that are going with me. Unusual. Well, I always try, if we have a holiday on the ship, I always try to bring something for the holiday. So this year we'll be out there for Valentine's Day, which is, you know, a silly Hallmark holiday. But I have a Valentine's Day kit for making Valentines. And I did this in 2001. We were down there and I made Valentines for everyone on the ship, including the person who I ended up marrying. And my husband to this day has that Valentine that I gave him even before we started dating, and he keeps it in his wallet still.
Oh. So yep. The first time you went to Antarctica, what was the most surprising thing that you discovered about Antarctica that you didn't expect?
I think this sounds a little bit cliche, but I was unprepared for how beautiful it is. Really, really unprepared. It is hauntingly beautiful. Once you go there, you have to get back. And it's just a compulsion. You have to figure out, when can I get back? When is the next time I can go? Where can I go? And it's a really, it's the most beautiful place on earth. And I've traveled a lot, and hands down, it's just gorgeous.
Because of the snow, or do you actually see granite or mountains, or do you, is the sky always blue, or what makes it so beautiful?
Well, on the peninsula, there are very large mountains that come sort of straight out of the ocean, and they're covered with ice, but we can definitely see rock, and they're just absolutely beautiful. On a nice sunny day when it's perfectly calm, you know, you've got sea ice and penguins playing around, and the light coming off the glaciers and the mountains is just incredible. It is not always sunny on the peninsula, and oftentimes you'll get a very low fog, and it's in that foggy place that it looks like a black and white picture. I could take a picture of the ocean and the mountains, and you wouldn't see any color, and it's really incredibly beautiful and eerie. In East Antarctica, it's not as exciting in terms of the views that you get. Mostly, you look out and you see just the start of a dome of the ice sheet that just goes on forever. And a lot of very large icebergs, it's always really exciting to, you know, sail past a large iceberg, and they just have so many different kinds of shapes and sizes and colors. Sometimes if they roll over, they're green. So, yeah, it's incredibly beautiful.
Now, you're going down at the peak, or just a few days past the peak of summer. The sun is at its highest point there in Antarctica. It makes the days longer. Does the sun set in Antarctica this time of year?
So it barely sets if you're south of 66 degrees south, so the Antarctic Circle. Yeah, it not much. And we will be south of the Antarctic Circle and a little bit north as well. So we might get twilight for maybe 4 hours this time of year, but it's always light.
And Amelia, the only thing I know about Antarctica is watching The Thing, both the Thing movie from 1954 and then the John Carpenter movie from the 1980s. And then I think there's been a raft of movies about Antarctica and how scary it is. Do you ever watch those movies? And what do you think?
So my favorite line in a movie of all time is The Day After Tomorrow, in the first sort of scene when the ice is breaking up and there's a paleoclimatologist, which is what I am, somebody who studies the past climate. And this guy says, hold on, let me plug this data into my paleoclimate model, you know, as the glacier is breaking into pieces. That's my favorite line in a movie of all times. It's just silly. But I tend to not really love disaster movies, except when they are kind of kitschy.
Amelia, thank you so much. I know you're packing for your trip, so I want to let you go, but is there anything else that you want to point out about your study of the East Antarctic ice sheet, how important it is, and maybe where people could read more of what you found out so far in your previous trips?
Yeah, so I am going down to Antarctica this time with the International Ocean Discovery Program, IODP. And if people want to look that up online, we have a very active presence in social media, and we will be posting pictures from my trip. Also, you can find me on Facebook at Expedition Antarctica, and please like me and follow me, and I'll be posting pictures from our trip as well. And I think just, you know, people in Florida need to be aware. Climate change is happening. Sea levels are rising. And we need to be aware of our impact on the environment.
Amelia Chevenel of the University of South Florida, thanks for coming on WMNF.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
That's Amelia Chevenel. She's an associate professor at the USF College of Marine Science, and she has studied Antarctica for years. She's on her way back to look at the East Antarctica ice sheet, and her latest research has been published in Nature. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We want to thank Richard Davis of St. Petersburg, who just made a donation to WMNF. Among his favorite shows, Democracy Now!, and he made an end-of-the-year donation to WMNF. You can make an end-of-the-year donation to WMNF. Just go to our website and keep this radio station on the air. Go to WMNF.org. I'm going to read now from the Huffington Post. So this, the first few lines of this contain a lot of spin. Keep that in mind, but then we're going to bring on our guest. Yesterday, President Trump falsely claimed that Congressional Republicans' tax bill essentially repeals over time Obamacare, perpetuating a false claim that he made previously to celebrate the bill's passage. And this is the president's Trump, this is the president's tweet from yesterday, and I'm just going to quote it. Based on the fact that the very unfair and unpopular individual mandate has been terminated as part of our tax cut bill, which essentially repeals over time Obamacare, the Democrats and Republicans will eventually come together and develop a great new health care plan. And the Huffington Post goes on to say that the GOP tax bill, which Trump signed into law last week, eliminates the Affordable Care Act's individual mandate, but leaves other essential parts of the law intact. Trump also argued in his tweet that both parties would eventually come together to work on a replacement for Obamacare, but that remains to be seen, as Republicans failed earlier this year to pass legislation to repeal the Affordable Care Act outright. And Democrats are committed to protecting the health care law. In place of complete repeal, Republicans have devised other ways to weaken the law's provisions, such as by eliminating the individual mandate, which will worsen insurance markets. But the tax bill does not affect other important provisions of Obamacare. And again, I'm reading from the Huffington Post, such as protections for people with pre-existing conditions, tax credits for people who buy their own insurance, and the expansion of state Medicaid programs. And nearly 9 million people enrolled in Obamacare for 2018, despite efforts by Trump and GOP leaders to undermine the program. As it turns out, there is more time to enroll for Obamacare for people here in Florida. And we're going to talk about that right now. And also, we're going to talk about the Children's Health Insurance Plan. And our guest is Melanie Hall, who's Executive Director of the Family Healthcare Foundation here in the Tampa Bay area. and it serves the counties of Hillsborough, Pinellas, Polk, and Pasco. And Melanie, welcome back to WMNF. Great to have you here. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
So, first of all, the president's tweet yesterday that essentially that the tax cut bill repeals Obamacare over time. What are your thoughts about that?
It's not been our experience that the passage of that tax bill has had much of an effect on anyone's enthusiasm for enrolling in the program. We actually, this year, in half the amount of time, enrolled the same number of people that enrolled last year in Florida, 1.7 million. So clearly the need is demonstrated here in Florida. Clearly people are still feeling that this program is valuable to them and they're benefiting from it. And they still are calling us and asking for assistance to enroll. So what is being projected by the elimination of the mandate is next year in 2018, when people go to enroll, they might see approximately a 10% increase in premiums. This year, we saw an almost 40% increase in premiums, especially in the silver plans. And again, you can see that didn't really have the negative effect, I think, that was intended or at least expected. And so what we saw instead was the rise of tax credits and more people enrolling and feeling that they were actually getting a better deal potentially than they got last year.
Why the increase in premiums for the Affordable Care Act or under Obamacare?
For this year or for next year?
The last 2 years, the 10% increase in premiums this year, 40% last year.
So last year, the reason there was that large jump is the decision by the current administration to eliminate cost-sharing reduction payments. And the insurance companies in Florida anticipated that. So knowing that they would need to cover that loss, they actually increased premiums this year and for 2018 and loaded most of those increases in the silver plans. That's also where the determination is made for how much someone is eligible in terms of tax credits or financial help to help them pay those premiums. So it actually, in many cases, did assist people in paying for those increased premiums. For the 2019 projections, it is based on the fact that the tax bill did eliminate the individual mandate. And so they're expecting that maybe some of the younger, healthier folks might drop out of the marketplace, and that might change the market a little bit. And as a result, they're anticipating about a 10% increase.
Okay, I see. So now you tell me that they've extended the amount of time that people have to sign up for Obamacare, and people still have more days?
Here in Florida, they have, as well as a couple of other states and some places in Texas. And it's not really an extension. It's actually a special enrollment period for those areas that were affected by natural disasters, in this case, a hurricane. So for anyone that was affected, they either lived in or moved to an area that was affected by either Irma or Maria. They did allow 2 extra weeks for the special enrollment period, that people can still come to us and we can assist them with that application and call the call center, or they can call that national call center number directly and do an application over the phone. So there is still an opportunity if people, you know, are worried that they miss that December 15th deadline. There's still an opportunity for people to call and get enrolled for 2018 up until December 31st.
Okay, December 31st, so they've got until this Sunday, and they can do it online until Sunday night.
That's correct. Yeah. And then once they do their online application, they'll get a notification saying that they are no longer eligible because of the fact that open enrollment ended December 15th. That is okay. Go ahead and call the call center number that will be on the screen and let them know that you live in Florida, and because all of the counties in Florida are considered disaster areas by FEMA as a result of the storm, they are able to still get a special enrollment period and are able to enroll for 2018.
And what are the phone numbers? What are the best phone numbers to call if people want to sign up?
So if you would like local help, the easiest phone number is to call our office, which is 813-995-1066. We can either assist you to go ahead and go through the application and help you call the call center, or we can take your email address and actually send you instructions so that you have step-by-step what you will need when you call the call center.
Okay, and so again, your local number is 813-995-1066. There's no charge for this. You work for free, at least on behalf of the clients.
That's correct. Well, in general, we're not in any way funded by any insurance companies either. So we don't get incentives in the same way brokers or agents do. We're grant funded specifically to provide impartial information and help people choose what's best for their budget, their medical needs, their family. So we're available and really happy to help. And again, we have locations in all four counties that you mentioned earlier.
Now you told me earlier you've been on M&F a couple of times in the last few months. You told me earlier that although premiums are increasing, people are also finding that frequently their subsidy for health insurance is increasing too, so that people might find that they're saving a lot of money by signing up for Obamacare.
Correct. So again, the increases in Florida, for the most part, happened within that silver plan category. There are four different kinds of plans, and they use the second lowest silver plan, the cost of that, to basically establish what someone's tax credits will be on a sliding scale. So when that second lowest premium jumped up 40% this year, then often people's tax credits also went up that same amount. And if someone actively went in and shopped, if they were enrolled last year, what they might see is that they could choose that lowest silver plan or a bronze plan and actually pay less premiums than they did last year. We had quite a few consumers this year that because of that jump in premium, we're able to choose like a bronze plan for zero premium this year. So they had that safety net of coverage. They weren't paying a monthly premium. They are, you know, they did make the choice to carry a larger deductible. But for someone who's younger or healthier, it gave them that safety net of having coverage for not having to pay a monthly premium at all. So I think people were very pleasantly surprised this year when they went into shop, especially considering what some of the headlines were in the news.
Well, on the line with us is Melanie Hall, who's Executive Director of the Family Healthcare Foundation here in the Tampa Bay area. And if you've got a question about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org, so you can send in your question that way. Here's the address again, dj@wmnf.org. Melanie, does it make sense? I don't know. Tell me what you think of this idea that if the future of the Affordable Care Act is somewhat cloudy, would you agree with that premise?
What is happening right now is that, you know, it's interesting that in President Trump's tweet, he's talked about the fact that there will be bipartisan efforts to look at changes in healthcare policy. But interestingly enough, there have been bipartisan efforts that have been ongoing since the summer. And so what we're hearing from those committees that are really looking at healthcare policy is some tweaks and improvements to the current program that really are hoping to stabilize the insurance marketplace. And as a result of either restoring those cost-sharing reduction payments, a couple of other things that they're looking at, and in fact, some suggestions that we have provided to our local legislators here, we're really hoping to see some stabilization of the program and the idea that there won't be so many changes for consumers from year to year.
And what I was going to ask is that if somebody's been putting off an operation, they haven't had health insurance maybe, and would now be a time if you were thinking about getting that shoulder surgery or knee surgery and you haven't had health insurance, now be a good time to sign up, at least to see, you know, what your costs would be under the Affordable Care Act.
It would be, because, again, remember, part of that law is, and you mentioned it earlier in the Huffington Post article, part of the law is really to eliminate the ability to charge someone more because they have a pre-existing condition. That was something that kept people out of the insurance market for many, many years until the passage of this law. So that provision of the law absolutely is intact. And if someone wants to look at what their options are now before December 31st here in Florida, that would be an ideal time to do that so that you do have access in the coming year for whatever health care is appropriate for you. And, you know, if you have a pre-existing condition, you need a surgery or medications, we want to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to get what they need and to be in the best health possible.
And again, that number is 813-995-1066. Have you gotten a lot of calls in the last few weeks?
We have, especially that week leading up to the December 15th deadline. Florida, the week before that, by December 9th, had enrolled just about, just over, actually, a million Floridians into the health insurance marketplace. But by December 15th deadline, it was 1.7 million. So that last week of open enrollment was certainly a very, very active time for us. I think because of the holidays and because so few people really know about this hurricane special enrollment period, obviously it has not been as busy the last week and a half. However, that's why opportunities like this show are so important, is to make sure people understand they may still have an opportunity.
Well, you still have until this Sunday to sign up for the Affordable Care Act. And if you want, you can call the Family Health Care Foundation number, which is 813-995-1066, and find out about Obamacare. We're talking with the executive director of the Family Health Care Foundation, Melanie Hall. She's on the phone with us. Melanie, I want to ask you about the CHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance Program. I understand that there's some problems with its renewal. Could you, first of all, what is CHIP? What does it do?
So the Children's Health Insurance Program is a federal program that then gets administered at each state level by the state agency. So here in Florida, it's called Florida Kid Care. And it includes, there's some separate funding for children on Medicaid, but the CHIP funding is for children who are on Medikids or Healthy Kids, which is a subsidized program. So families between 130% up into 200% of the federal poverty level. So middle-class working families can actually get access to excellent, high-quality health care for either $15 or $20 a month for their children. And there are many families here in Florida that really depend on this program, as well as across the country. So it is very concerning for us that on September 30th, that CHIP funding needed to be reauthorized for another 5 years. And it's really gotten caught up in some partisan posturing at this point, and they keep extending some current funding, but they haven't actually voted. Congress hasn't actually voted to reauthorize that program and to have stable funding for the next 5 years. Last week, when the House and Senate both passed some continuation funding to keep the government running and avoid a shutdown, what was included in that was, again, another quarter of extended funding for the CHIP program. But that doesn't put in place that policy and that five-year stable funding that we're certainly hoping for.
Have you seen families affected by this, people that have come to you to say, Melanie, we're really worried that for our kids or our child, this program has been essential, and the fact that it hasn't been renewed is going to hurt our situation? Can you tell us a story? Give us an example.
Sure. In fact, we have, for my organization, we have a family advisory council, and we include families on a regular basis with decision making and, you know, collecting their stories and messages to be able to send to lawmakers and decision makers to understand really how this does affect people on the ground. And a great story is one of the families that is part, the mother is part of our family advisory council, has a 14-year-old child who is chronically ill, and they really don't have access to any kind of affordable care except through the Healthy Kids program. So they pay their monthly premium. They have access to all of the doctors and coordinated care that this child needs, and they feel like it's been a lifesaver for them. So it was very concerning that there was a potential threat to this funding. And we've heard from other families as well that they were concerned about it because it has been in the news quite a bit. It has helped that the Healthy Kids Corporation has really provided some communication out to families to let them know that at this point in time, there's really no plan to do anything differently, and that they do have some extended funding. But I think families and those of us that work with families are certainly going to be relieved when there is some actual passage of legislation that reauthorizes this very important program.
And Melanie, how many families in Florida use the CHIP program?
About 300,000.
Yeah. Well, here's a question from one of our listeners, and let me just tell our listeners that if you have a question about signing up for the Affordable Care Act, you can call us at 813-239-9663. Laura writes this. She's in Palm Harbor. She says, I changed my Blue Cross plan from silver to bronze, which has a $0 premium, but my Blue Cross bill for January still reflects the silver plan cost and will be deducted from my bank account. Will I get reimbursed when they get documentation that I've switched over to the bronze plan?
It's a great question. And really what I would do, if you have a Florida Blue online account, the easiest thing to do is to go ahead into your account and make sure that that change is being reflected. If not, I would call up the Florida Blue customer service number and make sure that that happens before they actually deduct that amount from your bank account. It's much better to be proactive and make sure that the accurate information is reflected than to try and play catch up after the fact.
Well, Melanie, I we're going to move on and kind of change gears here. But again, people have until this Sunday to sign up for the Affordable Care Act. They might be pleasantly surprised, especially if they go through a navigator, such as your organization offers, the Family Healthcare Foundation. So what's the best way to contact your organization to talk to a navigator to maybe find out the best way to sign up for the Affordable Care Act?
Sure. You can call our local number here at 813-995-1066, and we will answer any questions that you have. But if you're wanting to sit down one-on-one with a navigator, we have quite a few appointments still open for the rest of this week, and we could certainly help anybody that needs assistance. And if not, they can go on healthcare.gov and do an online application, and there is a national number that's listed on healthcare.gov that people can call directly as well. So there are a few different options for people that are still wanting to enroll before this new deadline because of our, here in Florida, being eligible for a special enrollment period of this Sunday, December 31st.
And Melanie, if people are concerned about CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, what advice do you have if they have, if they're on the CHIP program but fear that Congress is not moving fast enough? What do you suggest?
We really encourage them to reach out to their own congressional member, and certainly to Senators Rubio and Nelson as well. But we have both Representative Castor and Representative Belarakis are on the Energy and Commerce Committee that are considering this funding, but as well as, all of the local legislators, Representative Crist, Representative Ross, it's important that they hear from their constituents and the fact that this could very well affect, their family with a child who needs these services. Those personal stories have a much stronger effect directly from constituents than any advocacy work that my organization can do. So we always encourage families to reach out directly to their local congressional member.
Well, Melanie Hall, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me.
All right. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. And that's Melanie Hall, who is Executive Director of the Family Healthcare Foundation, which provides services here in the Tampa Bay area, especially to people in Hillsborough, Pinellas, Polk, and Pasco counties. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls, and we can talk about whatever news story you'd like to bring up. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's see what's where we're headed with this conversation. We're going to go right now to somebody who's been holding on since we were talking about the Antarctic ice shelf melting. Let's go to Bo, who's in North Clearwater. Hi, Bo. You're on WMNF. What would you like to comment about?
Hi, Rob. I'd like to comment about a couple of things. I'll make it real quick. First, I'd like to have my Affordable Care Act with Humana this month went from $488 to Blue Cross Blue Shield next month to $588. I'd like to have the same socialized medicine that Jack LaPala, who he and his wife pay $180 a month, and his son Chris LaPala, my congressman, state congressman, he pays $50 a month. People need to wake up and start calling their state congressmen and senators and tell them that they want the same socialized medicine that they get. This country is being just stolen money from the poor and the working class. And these senators and congressmen, these state senators and congressmen, have nice socialized medicine that I'd love to have. My last comment, the hour before the last show, they had a comedian on making light of the assassination of Kennedy and using his brain. I was horrified at that joke. It was disgusting to me. I could not believe I was hearing it. I had the fortune to meet Carrie Kennedy, Robert Kennedy's daughter, in Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky, when the Coalition of Immokalee Workers signed a contract with Taco Bell. And I told Carrie when I met her, I thanked her for the sacrifice that her family has given this country. And I thanked her for how much that her family meant to my family. My father, when we were growing up, there were three people we prayed to and prayed for. There were Jesus Christ, the Democratic Party, and the Kennedys, and Jimmy Hoffa. As my father would say, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. And I just find it appalling, and I hope that you never put that comedian on again about Kennedy. And I hope you have a nice day, Rob.
All right, Bo, thanks a lot. That was not on my show, but thanks for your comments. It's I think it's still a sore spot for a lot of people, the assassinations of the 1960s. Kennedy's assassination and King's assassination, both RFK and JFK and MLK and Malcolm X. It's a sore spot, especially for people that live through it. It's hard to look back at that. Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. So if there's an issue that you want to bring up, I should say that The Latvalas are in the state legislature, and just a point of note that Jack is a state senator, and his son Chris is a state representative. The folks that go to Washington, D.C. are members of Congress. If you're a senator, you're a member of Congress, and if you're in the House of Representatives, that's who we usually call Congress members. Technically, they're representatives. We don't talk enough about the state legislature and what it means and what it does. At least we try to talk about it here on WMNF, but broadly speaking, we don't talk enough about what goes on in Tallahassee, so if you watch the 6 o'clock news, oftentimes Tallahassee is ignored. The state legislative session begins in just a few days in Tallahassee. They moved it up this year. Usually it starts in early March, and this year it's going to start in early January because it's an election year, and folks are going to run, most of the folks in the legislature are going to run for office. Many of them are running for re-election too, so they move up the legislative session. But at the session, all sorts of things are discussed, including the future of education, the future of Florida's environment, the future of law enforcement, pay for state workers, many of whom haven't had an increase in pay in years. So it's always important to watch what goes on in the legislature. There was a really interesting article about education funding and education testing in Mother Jones Magazine. It looked nationwide at the increases in educational performance in the grades K through 12 around the country. And one of the things it pointed out the other day was that Florida is not doing so well. After years and years of experimenting with all these new ideas brought in by Jeb Bush and then succeeding governors, we put a whole lot of emphasis on testing here in Florida. And are we getting better results? Well, not according to the Mother Jones Magazine article. And maybe we'll talk about that in future shows. But it shows that in the Southeast, Florida is doing horribly in getting better results compared to other states. Tennessee is among the best states in the Southeast that's getting good results. And I'm not sure what they're doing there, but at least according to the article in Mother Jones Magazine that looked at, you know, after years of all this experimentation with privatization of schools, charter schools, the move towards high-stakes testing, we've really gone through that here in the state of Florida. But the article indicates that we're not doing as well as many nearby states. And we've here in Florida, we've kept teacher pay low, too, compared to other states. If you're a teacher, you get paid much better in places like California than you do here in the state of Florida. So we've kept pay low, and that has not resulted in a lot of good things in education. So again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Jeff Haynes is our phone producer today. And we can talk about global warming. We can talk about the Affordable Care Act, and we can talk about whatever else is on your mind. 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. Now, I've gotten a series of emails from somebody who was really hostile to our first guest, who was a professor at USF and heading on to Antarctica to look at the changes in the ice sheet there. And, you know, it's interesting sitting in this seat because, you know, you can't see this, but I have probably 8 or 9 emails from somebody who's really angry, calling the professor that we had on all sorts of names and ridiculing her and calling her a clueless left-wing expert. And I think, well, that's very interesting. And I wonder if this person who's in the 352 area code has a PhD and how much they've studied on the question of global warming. I dare not read most of these messages to you because the anger is throughout the emails, and the F word comes through a lot, so I really couldn't do justice to what this person is thinking. But he uses the word libtard, and it's interesting sitting in the seat and seeing all the hostility to the question of whether or not there's climate change going on. If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001, and you can record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. In the next hour, Nola will be here, and Nola will host the Midpoint program. Then we've got executive session today, as we always do on a Wednesday at 1 o'clock. And then we go back to the music. Scott Elliott is going to celebrate the end of the year and the beginning of the new year today, when Scott Elliott comes in for It's the Music Today at 2 o'clock this afternoon here on WMNF. Remember, if you want to keep MNF alive, please make a donation on our secure website. Please go to WMNF.org. There is time to make that end of the year donation. You can go to WMNF.org and make a donation there and help us get through the next few months. I think you're going to want us to be here as we go through what's likely to be a very rocky period in our nation's history. So thanks a lot for listening. Thanks to Jeff Haynes for being our phone producer today. I'm Rob Lori. This is Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. Now, here's the latest news from NPR.